Okay, so we're diving into some fascinating material today. A legal case out of Delaware Solomon v. Pathee Communications Corporation. This case really gets at something that's super relevant in the business world and for law students like yourselves, challenges to tender offers. And to make things even more interesting, this particular case involves a controlling shareholder. So we're going to unpack all of that, and by the time we're done, you'll have a much better grasp on when shareholders can actually challenge these offers and what the legal landscape looks like.
Yeah, you're likely running into this in your legal studies, maybe gearing up for a course on corporate law or mergers and acquisitions. In this case, Solomon, it's a great example of how Delaware law tries to strike that delicate balance, protecting the rights of shareholders while also giving companies the freedom to make deals and, operate efficiently. So our mission here is to distill the core principles from Solomon and really understand why it's considered such a landmark decision in this area of law.
All right, so let's set the stage. What exactly happened in Solomon v. Pathee? Can you give us like the SparkNotes version?
Absolutely. So the story starts with Credit Lyonnais, Banque Nederland NV, we'll just call them CLBN for short. They were a bank and they financed Pathee Communications Corporation's acquisition of MGM. Now here's the catch. CLBN wasn't just lending money, they actually got a controlling stake in both Pathee and MGM as collateral for the financing. So they were in a pretty powerful position from the get-go.
Wow, so they were more than just a lender. They had a real ownership interest. What happened next?
Well, things got interesting. CLBN, using their controlling stake, decided to remove the existing directors on the boards of both Pathee and MGM. And then they launched a tender offer to buy the remaining shares of Pathee that they didn't already control. They offered $1.50 per share for those remaining shares. And all of this was happening while CLBN was also in the process of, get this, foreclosing on their stock in both companies. So you can see how this might raise some eyebrows, right?
Yeah, definitely. A bank essentially taking over and then making a move to buy out everyone else. You can see why minority shareholders might start feeling a little uneasy. So, how did they respond to all of this?
Well, one shareholder in particular, a guy named Robert Solomon, was not happy about it, not one bit. In fact, he filed a lawsuit the day before CLBN even formally announced the tender offer. Talk about being proactive, right?
Yeah. That's some serious initiative. So what were the main points Solomon raised in his lawsuit? What was he arguing?
Okay, so his lawsuit hit on a bunch of key points. He claimed that the tender offer itself was fundamentally unfair to shareholders, especially those who might be considering tendering their shares. He argued the $1.5 per share price was way too low, inadequate, and that it was coercive given CLBN's controlling position. Essentially, he was saying that CLBN, as the controlling shareholder, was using its power to strong-arm other shareholders into accepting a bad deal. And remember, under Delaware law, controlling shareholders have a fiduciary duty to act in the best interests of all shareholders, not just themselves. On top of that, Solomon argued that the Path board was basically controlled by CLBN, which meant they couldn't act independently in the best interests of the minority shareholders. And finally, he raised concerns about the lack of truly independent advisors and potential conflicts of interest involved in the whole process. So he was coming at this from a lot of different angles.
So a lot of potential red flags there. What was the initial court's response to all of this?
Right, so the first court to hear this case was the Delaware Court of Chancery. And they ultimately dismissed Solomon's case. Their reasoning was that Solomon hadn't provided enough specific facts, enough hard evidence, to really back up his claims. Legally speaking, they said he failed to state a claim under Rule 12b-6. Basically, even if everything Solomon alleged was true, the court didn't think it added up to a violation of Delaware law that would allow his case to move forward.
Okay, so the first court tossed it out. But you mentioned there was also some action at the Delaware Supreme Court level, and there's an interesting procedural detail here too, right?
There is. So Solomon appealed the Court of Chancery's decision to the Delaware Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, in the end, agreed with the lower court's decision to dismiss the case, but they did have a bit of a critique about how the Court of Chancery got there, a little procedural hiccup.
What was that hiccup? I'm curious.
So the Supreme Court basically said, look, the Court of Chancery should have first addressed any questions about its own authority to even hear the case. We call these jurisdictional motions. They should have tackled those before deciding whether Solomon's actual claims were strong enough. So it's a question of what you address first in a legal proceeding. It's like making sure you're in the right courtroom before you start arguing your case.
So the Supreme Court is saying, hold on, let's make sure we're in the right place first before you even get into the meat of the argument. So Did they send the case back down to the Chancery Court based on that?
No, they actually didn't. And this is kind of interesting. They acknowledged this procedural misstep, but they also said, look, sending it back wouldn't change the outcome here. Why? Because they independently reviewed Solomon's claims, and they agreed. Even if the procedure had been different, his arguments just weren't strong enough to survive a motion to dismiss.
Got it. So even though there was this procedural point, the fundamental issue was the weakness of Solomon's claims. Which brings us to the central legal question that the Delaware Supreme Court really had to wrestle with. What was that question?
It boils down to this. Can a shareholder sue over the price of a voluntary tender offer from a controlling shareholder just because they think the price is too low? Or do they need to show something more, like actual coercion or bad faith on the part of the controlling shareholder? It's a question of when the courts should intervene in these kinds of situations.
That's a crucial distinction for sure. So what was the court's reasoning on this? And what are the big takeaways for law students listening in? What should they really grasp from this decision?
The court's reasoning gives us some really valuable insights. First off, they really stressed the importance of facts and legal complaints. They said, look, Solomon's claims were too general. He used words like unfair and coercive, but he didn't give specific examples to demonstrate how the offer was unfair or how CLBN had actually coerced shareholders. It's like saying a cake is bad without explaining what's wrong with it. Is it dry? Is it burnt? You got to get specific. Remember, folks, legal conclusions need to be backed up with actual factual allegations that, if proven, would support those conclusions.
Right. You can't just throw out legal terms without the factual basis to back them up. What else did the court highlight?
Another key point, and this is crucial for understanding Delaware corporate law, is that the court made a clear distinction between voluntary tender offers and other types of transactions like cash out mergers. In a voluntary tender offer, that stricter legal standard of entire fairness review, where the company has to prove the deal was fair in both price and process, it doesn't automatically apply just because there's a controlling shareholder involved.
Interesting. So less scrutiny in a voluntary tender offer versus a merger, even with a controlling shareholder. Why is that?
The big takeaway here is that just because you as a shareholder think the price in a voluntary tender offer is too low, that alone doesn't give you the right to sue. The court's reasoning is basically this. In a truly voluntary offer, shareholders have the power to make their own decisions. They can simply choose not to tender their shares if they don't like the price. The court doesn't want to step in and second-guess the price in a voluntary deal unless there's evidence of something else going on, something fishy. It's about respecting the ability of shareholders to make informed choices in a free market.
So the court is basically saying shareholders have agency, they're not helpless, they can vote with their feet if they don't like the offer. Did they address the fact that CLBN was a controlling shareholder?
They did, and this is important. They said that just because CLBN was a controlling shareholder didn't automatically mean they did something wrong by making this tender offer. Solomon needed to show, with specific facts, how CLBN had misused that control. Like, did they use inside information to their advantage or engage in some shady self-dealing? He didn't provide those details in his complaint, so his claim wasn't strong enough.
That's a really important distinction for law students to understand. Control itself isn't the problem. It's the misuse of that control. Did the court have any, really clear statements that drove this point home?
Oh, yeah, they definitely did. They said very explicitly, involuntary tender offers, courts do not impose any right of the shareholders to receive a particular price. And they doubled down on the need for facts by saying, conclusions will not be accepted as true without specific allegations of fact. These quotes, they really cut to the chase, you know.
Yeah, those are pretty definitive statements from the court. We talked about coercion earlier. What exactly did the court say about what constitutes coercion in this context?
So they made it clear that if there's evidence of actual coercion, like if the controlling shareholder is using threats or deliberately misleading shareholders to pressure them into accepting the offer, then that's a whole different ballgame. But in Solomon's case, there was no explanation of how CLBN had coerced anyone. It's important to remember that just making a low offer doesn't automatically equal coercion in the legal sense. Coercion implies something more, something like accept this offer or else. Solomon just didn't allege anything like that.
That makes a lot of sense. So let's shift gears a little bit. Looking ahead, what does this case tell us about how future courts might approach similar situations? What's the test moving forward?
Solomon v. Path really lays out a roadmap for future cases involving challenges to tender offers, especially when you have a controlling shareholder. Going forward, to have a fighting chance in Delaware, shareholders will generally need to show either actual coercion by the offeror or major problems with the information given to shareholders, like outright lies or deception. But, and this is the big takeaway from Solomon, simply arguing that the price is too low in a voluntary tender offer that's unlikely to fly.
So for all the future lawyers out there, why is Solomon v. Patt a case that they should really know?
Solomon is a fantastic reminder that strong legal arguments need to be built on a foundation of facts, not just broad claims or legal jargon. It really drives home that legal principle of pleading with particularity. You gotta have the receipts, so to speak. And it's often cited because it lays down the law in black and white about when a court will actually entertain a challenge to the price of a voluntary tender offer.
And for people who might find themselves in a position of control within a company, what are the key takeaways for them?
Well, for those in the driver's seat, Solomon suggests that voluntary tender offers done right, with full transparency and no funny business, can be a pretty straightforward way to increase your ownership in a company without having to jump through a ton of legal hoops just because of the price being offered. But, and it's a big bup, full disclosure and avoiding any hint of coercion, those are absolutely critical.
So zooming out a little bit, what does Solomon v. Patt tell us about the bigger picture of Delaware corporate law?
You know, Solomon really underscores Delaware's philosophy of letting the market do its thing, especially when it comes to voluntary transactions. They generally trust shareholders to make their own informed decisions as long as they're not being actively misled or strong-armed. It's all about finding that balance between protecting minority shareholders and giving companies the freedom to make strategic moves.
All right, so let's wrap things up here. We've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive into Solomon v. Patt.
Essentially, Solomon gives us a clear framework for understanding when shareholders in Delaware can and cannot challenge a tender offer, especially when a controlling shareholder is involved. It hammers home the voluntary nature of these offers under Delaware law and sets a high bar for claims based solely on price. You got to show more than just, I don't like the price. You need to show evidence of coercion, deception, or conflict of interest.
Yeah, it's a really important case that highlights how Delaware tries to balance the need for predictability and certainty in business deals with the need to protect shareholders from being taken advantage of.
Absolutely. And for those of you in law school, Solomon v. Patt is definitely one to keep in your back pocket. It's a case that's still very relevant in discussions about shareholder rights and corporate governance. And as you continue your studies, it poses a really interesting question. How do we best protect minority shareholders while also giving companies the breathing room they need to operate and make strategic choices? That's the ongoing debate, and Solomon is a key part of that conversation.
A lot to chew on, for sure. Great insights, as always. Thanks for breaking it all down.
My pleasure. Always happy to dive into these cases.
And that's a wrap for this deep dive, folks. Catch you next time.
See ya.